You're listening to the All Mom Does podcast, where you'll find encouragement, information, and inspiration for the life you're living, the kids you're raising, the romance you're loving, and the faith you're growing. I'm your host, Julie Lyles Carr. Let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the All Mom Does podcast, this is a special edition of the podcast. This is episode 2 of a conversation that I had with neurologist and sleep expert Dr. Chris Winter. I want you to go back and listen to episode 1. We'll be sure and link that for you in the show notes, where Dr. Chris and I talk through all kinds of different things pertaining to sleep, to our kids, the different issues. And today we're going to be talking even more in depth about a lot of those things and the importance of sleep for us as parents and how it impacts our emotional health, our brain health. This was such an impactful conversation that we decided to just keep the mics rolling. Dr. Chris was really, really generous with his time. And so we just kept the mics rolling and said, you know what? We're going to make this a 2-part episode. So if you haven't listened to last week's, be sure and go back and do that. And then join me right here for part 2 of this incredible conversation with sleep neurologist and expert, Dr. Chris Winter. Even if somebody identifies as a night owl, part of an issue is a night owl, say 150 years ago, might have meant somebody who stayed up past 7:30 at night. You know, today that can mean all kinds of things. That can mean into the wee hours of the morning. But how long does it take to build, even when you're having to fight a little bit, your natural tendency, a habit of getting sleep into these parameters so that it does agree with the schedule and the school and the career work that you're doing? You know, we talk about a habit taking anywhere from 21 to 60 days or whatever. There's all kinds of agreement and disagreement on that. But with something like sleep, that it is, there are habituations we have surrounding sleep, but there's also those natural tendencies. How long should parents accommodate for that this could take to help get kids back on that path?
That's a great question. So let's think about the most radical transition that our bodies would probably see when it comes to this. And that would be either a shift worker, like let's imagine an emergency room nurse who works 7A to 7P. And then her supervisor says, okay, next week you're 7P to 7A. So we're literally going to flip-flop your schedule. The equivalent of that in travel is let's travel halfway around the world. Let's get on a flight, travel halfway around the world. Now you're 6 p.m. and suddenly you're 6 a.m. So those are the two biggest transitions that we would ever make in our body, where we're truly turning our degree or flip-flopping our schedule 180 degrees. Even in those situations, with the right planning and intervention, it shouldn't take any more than about 12 days. So now this, you know, does require some participation with the child, meaning that I need you to take the TV and the PlayStation and your phone out of your bedroom. And even if you can't having trouble sleeping tonight, that's fine. I can't have you pull your phone out and start texting your boyfriend stressful messages and, you know, looking at videos and that are people shooting each other and taking each other's stuff in some sort of video game situation. Like, I can't have that. So if the kid's like, look, I'll do whatever I need to do these types of things, it shouldn't take much more than 2 weeks. In fact, we do it a lot with baseball teams because they play spring training schedules day after day after day out in Arizona or Florida. And then all of a sudden in April, they flip over and now they've got all their games starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we usually start about 2 weeks before spring training ends with interventions, particularly for their more night-oriented players, to help them sort of draw back and be ready for a game. I'm sorry, for their morning-oriented players. To get ready for that game that's going to start in the evening, as opposed to all these games you've been playing during the day. So it shouldn't take that long. And there's all kinds of interventions that can be done that can be helpful. We're not even opposed. You know, most sleep doctors can say, here, we can give your kids, you know, medications to help them feel more awake just temporarily, you know, for the first week or so of this to help with that transition, because that wake up time can be difficult if your kid's struggling to sleep at night to get up and start going at 7 o'clock in the morning. So there are things you can do to kind of give them a little bit more energy so that they don't fall asleep or take naps during the day. But, you know, generally, if you start working about 2 weeks back from the school start time, it doesn't have to all happen all at once. Hey, honey, you've been going to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, waking up around noon. I'm going to get you up around 11 tomorrow. We'll do that for a few days. I mean, most kids don't have a problem with that. In fact, I think most kids who've experienced how terrible it can be to start on school day one, waking up at 6 o'clock when you've been waking up at noon. Probably welcome it. I mean, I've got a son who goes to the Naval Academy. He's already starting to transition his sleep much closer to what it would be when he's in school before he goes back for a second year.
Right. Now, you mentioned, substances that can maybe help a child, prescribed by a doctor, a sleep doctor, to help them maybe feel a little bit more awake. That means that I have to crack open something that for me was an absolute survival resource for a long time when, you're right, I don't necessarily, and I haven't in the past, required a lot of sleep. But I tell you what I was doing, Chris, I was using caffeine as a crutch to carry me across a lot of finish lines. And the caffeine need got bigger and bigger and bigger. And about 3 years ago, I went off. I've been off caffeine in various points in my life. Through some of my pregnancies, I went off caffeine. But I went off, I think, in a way that is more really for good in terms of caffeine is my primary dosing. I'll use a little green tea every now and then to stay a little more alert in the early afternoon. But caffeine, for me, was a real double-edged sword. And when I realize we don't do pop and stuff in our house, soda pop. So my kids aren't as exposed to a lot of caffeine. Now, a lot of them have gone on to become coffee drinkers and a couple of them very devoted coffee drinkers in their adulthood. But it feels like that we have a lot of kids who are on a lot of caffeine products today. How does all of that interrupt or enhance or supplement or sabotage this entire experience of sleep for kids, teenagers, all of that group?
Yeah, the answer is yes. It does all of those things. So to me, it's about what is that relationship with caffeine? Is it, I just really appreciate the subtle flavors of this, place where I go in the morning and get this great latte, and it's just a great way to start my day? Or use a very important word, which is crutch. You also use the word intentional. You're full of great words. So intentional, meaning that, my son who's at the Naval Academy would use caffeine only when he swam, like in some sort of meet. He had this sort of plan that an hour before his races would start, he had some sort of gel or something that had caffeine in it that he would take. But that's the only time he used it. Or is it, I've just drink so many monster energies during the day that's the only thing that I'm drinking, which can come with a lot of terrible things, including things like strokes in kids that we've seen. I mean, I think probably 4 times in my career I've seen strokes from massive caffeine amount of use. And so I don't have a problem with caffeine if it's being intentional. We allow our kids to have a little bit of tea or green tea or soda, pop. You must be from the Midwest because you're using the word pop.
I'm from all over, and because of that, I grew up in California and Washington, D.C., and live in Texas. I mean, and really, to really honor my roots, Chris, from my Mississippi grandmother and my Alabama birthplace, I should be saying Coca-Cola or Coke. Everything should be a Coke.
Absolutely. I think somebody should make a map, and by each state, write the word that people use to refer to soft drinks in general. Yeah,
soft
exactly.
Drinks is, yes. Yeah, soft drinks is probably the more elegant term. Let me just
I love pop. Yeah. But anyway, so to me, it's about, what is that relationship with caffeine? And if you're saying, look, we allow our kids to have a soda or a tea or two during that 2-week period leading up to school. And then the plan is once they've adjusted to school, we cut it off, but we do allow it sometimes on a night of heavy midterm studying or, I think as long as you can answer the question, you're having the tea or the coffee or the soda, why? Oh, it's because I'm in the middle of midterms. I had 3 tests in 4 days and I'm just using this to, because there is research, it's performance enhancing. It might affect memory in a positive way. So I'm not opposed to it. I just don't like it when people are leaning on it during the good times. They're drinking 3 cups of coffee even when their life is pretty normal. So I think that's okay. And also just think that, caffeine in itself is probably not as much of a problem as the other things in that drink. If it's just a nice organic coffee grind that you did, a little espresso or whatever with some milk, great. If it's putting a bunch of sugar and coffee and flavors, and I think we have to be a little bit more careful about those things. But I think that that's for a parent to decide about their kid, what they want their relationship to be. I'm just here to say, if you said, well, we let our kid drink a little coffee when he's getting ready to go back to school, and sometimes when he's staying up late to study, where he had a soccer game and now has to come home and get homework done. Hey, whatever you need to do, I think is perfectly fine.
Right. I think it's important to be monitoring just how much caffeine our kids are getting, because it can slip away from you very easily. It slipped away from me as a mom. It slipped in my own personal consumption of caffeine. It's gotten away from me. And of course, it's gotten away from me at times with my kids. I am amazed at times when a parent takes a step back and realizes how much caffeine their kids actually getting, even
especially
little kids.
Once your kids can drive,
right,
where they're spending significant time away from you, you know, when they're little and they're kind of in your home or they're homeschooled, that control is better. Yeah, they might get a Coke when they go to a friend's sleepover party, but for the most part, you're kind of seeing that. And if it's not in your house, it's probably not in their lives. But once they start to expand that bubble, you know, and they're going to the drink machine because they've got iPay on their phone and they can get a drink at school, or they're driving around. Yeah, we would always find cups in the cup. Our kids are so bad about destroying evidence. You know, like I was really good at that growing up. Like, crunch it up, put it in a bag at the bottom of the trash can. You'll never know it was whatever that thing was there. Yeah. They're just like, they just leave the can of Coca-Cola or whatever it is right there. So I agree with you. That can definitely be a problem as you get a little bit older. And you need to have conversations about it when they're young, saying, look, nothing's off limits, so to speak, but we want you to do what's best for your body in the long run, and that your decisions are intentional.
Right. What do you say to someone who right now is working in a situation that is requiring what you described earlier, where one week they're on days, the next week they're off? And, you know, this is a condition replete throughout the medical community. It doesn't surprise me that the medical community at times has struggled to understand exactly the application of sleep and how it can be influencing different health and behavioral issues, because for the most part, there's an environment around the medical community that values people who can just keep vampire hours and bop in and out. But when it comes to really understanding for people who are having kind of these crazy work schedules and trying to have family time, and things are moving and shifting back and forth, shift workers, medical workers, long haul drivers, pilots, all the rest, what is the best thing if they can't change the career or they don't want to change the career? What is the best thing they can be doing to protect their health and their brains long term, the more we're learning about the importance of sleep?
So this is the question where I'm going to pretend like I'm getting a bad internet signal from you and can't hear you, because it's a difficult question to answer. And it's made more difficult because if you talk to the average individual and say, describe to me your friend or your family member who's the worst sleeper, they're going to talk to you about somebody, oh, it's Aunt Jean. She just can't sleep. She gets in bed, it takes her hours now. She's tried every sleeping pill and nothing works. You know, as a sleep specialist, I'm not terribly worried about Aunt Jean. She's getting into a comfortable bed and cannot fall asleep. That's not the way a body who's sleep deprived behaves. It's like the person who can't find anything to eat, finding a buffet, walking in and finding nothing good to eat. That never happens. So the problem we have in the way that we talk about sleep and the way in which media portrays sleep is that Aunt Jean is the face of sleep problems. No, the face of sleep problems is the person you're describing who's working crazy hours or working two jobs to make a mortgage payment. There's a lot of that going on right now. And as soon as that person gets home, maybe gets their shoes off and sits down the bed, they are out cold. So everybody describes Uncle Jim, that guy, as being a great sleeper. I wish I could sleep like Uncle Jim. Every time he sits down, he falls asleep.
Yeah.
And that's the guy that I'm really concerned about. And so when you start looking at kids, the same thing can happen with them. They play field hockey. They're the president of their National Honor Society. They make great grades. They're very diligent about their work. And man, schoolwork in 2021 is tough. I mean, I look at what my kids do and compare it to what I did in high school. Oh, it's not even close. And a lot of times it's sudden surges of homework that it wasn't like they weren't prepared for. You know, I've got three tests and two papers, and I didn't know about this. And so anyway, so I think kids these days can be little mini shift workers. And so how do we deal with that? I say to an adult, hey, listen, I know you're working three jobs, but I need you to stop driving Ubers in between your two jobs. And that conversation might go, well, you're right. Or it might be like, well, great. So you'll pay my mortgage since I'm not going to have this income.
Right. Right.
And that's where we come into this idea of shift work disorder, which is obviously something much more applicable to adults. But I think that you could stretch the boundaries of the definition and find all kinds of kids that are shift work disordered individuals. They've got too much responsibility preventing them from getting the adequate amount of sleep they get. And some of them can do okay in those situations, others can't. It's probably the reason why so many kids fall asleep at the wheel driving to school in the morning. It's a huge problem. I mean, Bob Verone, who's a sleep researcher down in South Carolina, did a paper on that and said, yeah, kids are killing themselves because they're too sleepy to drive when they first wake up in the morning and go to their, you know, National Honor Society prayer breakfast or whatever they're doing in the morning. So to me, I mean, I think that the key is you've got to look at the situation and understand some difficult decisions might be made. I don't know that you can do all these things. And for an adult, when you have that conversation, and the conversation is like, look, Chris, I can't get outside of my shift work because I'm a young nurse and the young nurses in the hospital get all the terrible shifts. I've got to hang in there for at least another couple of years before I start getting the more choice, predictable shifts. There are medications that are FDA approved for shift work disorder. And shift work disorder does not require a sleep study. It is a clinical diagnosis of an individual works unusual hours. And because of that, they are struggling socially or professionally with fatigue and sleepiness. If you're listening to this and the answer is like, oh gosh, that's me or that's my partner, then you can talk to your doctor and say, look, I need help here. Because as much as I would like for you to give up driving the Uber, when you say no, my responsibility to you or your child does not end. My responsibility is, okay, well, what can I do to keep you from falling asleep driving that Uber and hurting yourself or someone else? Here's what I can do, but we're going to continue to work to try to make this difficult situation you're in at least marginally better. Like, we may not be able to improve it completely. If we can make it 25% better, we know that shift work disorders and things of that nature have true medical consequences. In fact, the World Health Organization says shift work is a class 2A carcinogen.
Wow.
So just shift work, particularly in women and breast cancer, leads to higher incidence of cancer than people who work 9 to 5 every day, weekends off. You know, how lovely it would be to work that way every day. But, you know, if you're a medical student or a resident, you're a young law person, a young teacher, a young nurse, that's not in the cards. A long-distance truck driver you mentioned, I did a podcast for a long-distance truck drivers, and the guy called me up afterwards and said, your podcast is so popular. Yeah, because these guys and gals, their gals are struggling with this all the time. And you know, they make laws that you can only drive a certain amount of time before you have to take a break. But if you're not sleepy when it's time for the break, so they deal with a lot of consequences with that. But there are ways to fix those problems or at least mitigate the chances that they will dramatically harm you or your child.
Right. I love what you're saying about shift work because, you know, I may have a mom out there listening who's saying, well, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom right now. I don't really understand, you know, I don't have to deal with what maybe someone who is a surgeon or a nurse or a truck driver does. But I will tell you, there were definitely seasons in my early motherhood that it felt like shift work.
And the crushing thing about motherhood, and I say motherhood intentionally because dads don't do anything. Give me a break. I love, I'm going to start a podcast called All Dad Does.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a very different group of guys on there. Like, what'd you do today? I don't know. I watched a little bit of Dirty Jobs after I got home from work and had a sandwich and went to bed. Like, you know, you're not signing permission notes. You're not, you know, give me a break. So, but I think the crushing thing about what you described is that it's totally unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, 7A for 3 days and you're 7P to 7A back and forth. At least you kind of know I'm going to be working these 12 hours, this overtime I'm covering for my friend here. And you kind of have it all mapped out. I mean, we knew what was coming in residency. It wasn't pretty, but we knew the schedule. When you're a mother of several kids and you got kids who aren't sleeping that well at that point, waking up and whatnot, you never really feel comfortable sitting down to write the emails or work on your dissertation or your online classes or whatever other things you've got going on. because at any moment, one of the kids that's in their room is going to start calling out for more water, or they saw somebody in their closet. They're sure. Right. It's amazing how many moms say, my kids slept wonderfully today, but I got nothing done, because you're always waiting for, it's like when we were on call, like sometimes I didn't even want to go to sleep because I knew as soon as I did, the pager was going off and somebody needed a needle stuck in their neck, you know, whatever. Like, but then it wouldn't happen. And you're like, I could have slept for 3 hours, but I'm so anxious about what's about to happen. That can be a true torturous situation.
Well, and you know, at times I found myself too, Chris, where I really needed sleep, but I also needed time just to myself. And so there would be times that would kind of fight sleep in a way, because I just wanted to have some space, which to me ushers in a question for you, because I know you primarily focus on sleep. And I know the name of the second book is The Rested Child, but rest to me has a broader expression than just sleep. Yes. And rest to me is really an important component of being able to sleep. If I can feel like I'm coming into a rested place, then maybe I can sleep more. What is the correlation to you? And what are some of the things that we're doing that maybe we resolve some of the sleep stuff, or we at least admit to ourselves it's important and we begin to put some things in place to help us get quality sleep. But what if we still miss the whole thing about, but you need to rest too? Yep.
You're a very smart person, and I bet you can do this. So my question for you is, my homework for you is, there needs to be a name for that. Mm-hmm. The kids are down, your husband's gone to bed or fallen asleep on the couch, and for the first time all day, the house is quiet and you've got some time to yourself to either get work done, play a game of words with friends with your best friend from college, or to watch the next episode of Handmaid's Tale. I think everybody deserves that time.
Yeah.
And so what often happens is it becomes a conflict. Okay, I can watch Handmaid's Tale, which I love, and it's my show. My husband's asleep, so he won't complain about it. Or I could go to bed, and if I went to bed now, would probably fall asleep and get closer to 8 hours versus 7 or even 6.5 if I, check out Seth Meyers' monologue tonight, whatever. So I've always felt like it's kind of like this private time. Like it's like your little club. My wife's asleep on the couch. I'm all alone. The house is quiet. I can do whatever I want for the first time all day long. I don't necessarily want to end the day and then suddenly wake up and do this whole thing again, like this Groundhog's Day thing. Like this is the time. And I'm definitely have a problem with that. For the first time, so quiet. I just want to watch something mindless and play some solitaire and just not do anything for a minute. And I think that's very important. The book was called The Rested Child for a reason. I think it's very important to focus on rest and quiet and meditation versus sleep, particularly as a parent. In fact, we never called our nap time. It was rest time.
Same.
And I think that's so important, because I can tell you right now, Julie, I want you to rest. And you could say, okay. And you take your glass off, put your feet up on your table and close your eyes for a minute. Now you're resting. If I said, Julie, I want you to fall asleep right now, my guess is you can't do it. And so when we start to put kids and even ourselves in a position of, I need you to go to your room and just rest. And however you'd like to do it, you can read, you can play with your dolls, you can look at your sports car, draw mommy a picture, whatever you want to do. But I want you to rest. Now, if you fall asleep, that's great. But we're not going to judge success or failure of this period of time by unconsciousness. And it's important to really let kids understand, and adults too, that resting has tremendous value. In fact, there are studies on studies that show that if a person rests effectively, that it's cognitively and physically as refreshing as actually falling asleep. So what you were describing of that frazzled mother who finally has the opportunity to sleep. I mean, how many times have I gotten home from like these crazy call nights? I feel dangerous behind the wheel of a car, finally get into bed, and I don't fall asleep right away, which is crazy. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So when you start to change that from what's going on here to, it's okay, I'm just going to stay here in this bed, close my eyes, and just enjoy this comfortable bed in a dark room with nobody yelling at me and needing something from me. If I fall asleep, great. If I don't, I'm just going to sit there and think about my celebrity crush or what I need to get done this weekend or something that's completely different than that, or think about nothing. That is important restorative time. And if we can give that message to our kids, it really changes their relationship with sleep moving forward, meaning that it becomes less of a performance anxiety.
Right.
I've got to fall asleep now or else these terrible things happen to, you know, I'm going to enjoy this. If I get in bed and I don't fall asleep right away, that's fine. So we want people to at least be neutral about being awake in bed, and kids as well, versus that being something that they're scared of, fearful of, getting in trouble for, because that's not the pattern and the pathway we want to set our, you know, we told our kids when they were about six, listen, you know how long I have a bedtime. And I remember all of them were like,
woo!
Really? Ooh. Now, what we didn't tell them was, yeah, you need to be in your bedroom unless you smell smoke or see that guy in the truck driver hat that you don't recognize. You can come out then, but otherwise, no. But you can do whatever you want to, and if you'd like to get in bed and turn your light on and go to sleep, go right ahead. What we didn't tell them was we're going to wake them up at the same time every day, happily, but there will be no, I didn't sleep well last night, Dad. Well, that's too bad. Well, tell me about it over breakfast, but we're going to get up now.
Right.
But there's no pressure to, you know, so focus on the wake-up time, a lot less pressure on the bedtime, even for younger kids, because then they start to go to bed without this sort of feeling of, oh, if Dad catches me awake in my bed with a comic book, I'm getting in big trouble. No, no, you're not. You stay up. In fact, my kid, one time he was always like, I can't sleep, Dad. I was like, why don't you just stay up all night and read comic books? And then you could maybe write an essay about that for your English class, about what it's like to stay awake all night on a school night. I remember him looking at me like, well, you're the worst sleep doctor in the world. But what I'm trying to do is say it's okay. Like sometimes you don't want to eat lunch. Like we don't need to do anything about it. Like you'll eat at some point. Don't
you'll
worry about
it.
Just wrap this.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So we're gonna not panic about that. So just go up and enjoy your way. And 20 minutes later, he was asleep. So
yeah. We
want to kind of cultivate that in our kids so that they have that great relationship with rest.
I love that distinction. And it's one of the reasons that we ended up calling it rest time at our house, because of the experiences I had as a kid, being told I needed to nap, being feeling like I was behaviorally failing, or I wasn't
minding.
Or I was being disobedient.
I have a memory of that in kindergarten, of being like, you get in trouble if you weren't asleep. So you were either asleep, which you thought, what kid is sleeping? Like Albert over there is out cold, like every time. And so I'm sitting here looking at Albert, like, and we would all fake sleep. Like, you know, it must have been comical to see all these little kindergartners pretending to be asleep so we didn't lose our recess. So crazy.
Yeah.
So if the teachers had said, look, you can sleep, Albert, if you like, or we have a selection of books that you can read quietly on your mat, but you have to be quiet, not talking, but otherwise, don't worry about sleep, just relax. And it's amazing how restorative rest can be if we come at it with that in, from that direction, versus, you know, trying to sleep, anxiety, angst, fear, loathing, why can't I sleep? Ah, you know, that's not what we want.
A much more open-handed definition of
Absolutely.
What it means. Okay, I think I've got a phrase for us. You can tell me if you think this works.
Yeah, because the phrase right now is revenge procrastination.
Yeah. And I don't
that
think
tells
that's
me
it.
It's not. It's not revenge. It's I want some time to myself. Like, okay,
right.
So what's your term? Because I'm going to make it happen.
Okay. I have a couple of options for you. What do we think about solo cogency rest? Or do we like auto cogency reset? I think reset, rest, cogency, solo, auto, something in there. Solo cogency reset, auto cogency reset. I don't know, something in there. But for me, it is a time of reset.
I think these are great. I like solo reset.
Yeah.
The cogency is a beautiful word. I mean, as a neurologist, I love cogent. That's such a powerful
term. Such a great word. Yeah.
But in terms of the hashtag,
solo reset. I'm happy with it.
And it is solo. It's not.
Right. It's not in the presence of other people.
My husband. Well, they have to be asleep, right?
Yeah,
on the couch. But you're right. It's that personal time. And I think that what you were saying about how you kind of came up through the professional ranks, this idea of, oh, that sounds great, boss, but I'm going to need a little solo time to my, like, you would have been fired on the spot. Like that idea that you need some recharge time, some me time or whatever it is, just seems weak. And it's not. It's essential.
It is.
It absolutely is essential. I love it. I think these are real. I think solo reset is
We're going to start making that happen.
Revenge procrastination does not sound at all like what we're describing, but solo reset absolutely does.
Yeah. I love that. I love how you are expanding our understanding of sleep. I want listeners to go out. I want them to find the book, The Rested Child.
Maybe I should whisper, if your listeners are asleep now, we did it, right?
Yeah, we did it.
So we gave you great information about sleep, or we put you to sleep. And either way, you win.
Either way, it's a win. It's a win all the way around. Where can listeners find out more about you and count you on social media, website,
sure,
all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm probably most active on Twitter. I'm at SportSleepDoc, just because I work with a bunch of sports teams. And what's funny is often when you work with the sports teams, you end up working with the partner of the player with the two newborn twins. Like, that's the sleep problem. So that's where I'm probably most active. I have Instagram page, W. Chris Winter, and at SportSleepDoc. And then my book is called The Rested Child: Why Your Tired, Wired, or Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Problem and How to Help. My first book is called The Sleep Solution: Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. You can find them both on Amazon and Kindle or Audible. If you really like the sound of my voice, you can.
The dulcet tones.
I can serenade you for several hours reading my book. All the books are available. I think it's going to help a lot of people, because once you get your kids sleeping through the night, there's not a lot of resources that really address the sleep health of a child as they mature. It's kind of like you're good until menopause kind of thing. That's sort of the theme out there. And that's really not the case. And I think that parents who arm themselves with that knowledge are going to be better able to find those disorders in their kids and figure things out. And if you're on the platform Clubhouse, I work with sleep.com. We do two shows every week, Thursdays, 5 o'clock Eastern time. And then Sundays, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, on themes about sleep. And we always have a guest expert on our show, and they range from parenting and kids and sleep to performance and sleep to the best mattresses all over the place. And they're a lot of fun too. So I invite you to, it's called Sleep Secrets, where you can just find and follow me on Clubhouse. But those are the 5 o'clock and 10 o'clock on Sunday.
Fantastic. These are such great resources. I love the distinction that, once we get through those infant years, we still need help making sure that our kids are sleeping and that we're sleeping and all the things. Dr. Chris Winter, you've just been a delight. Thanks so much for being here today. And we will make sure we get all those resources in the show notes that Rebecca puts together each and every week. You're just a delight, Chris. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go have a pop. I'm going to have a pop and enjoy my solo reset. So
I hope you
nobody
do.
Can be around me while I'm enjoying my root beer.
That's right. Hashtag solo reset.
Solo reset. See you now.
Check out the show notes for all the links, info, and other goodness from this week's episode, with a big thank you to our content coordinator, Rebecca. I've got a request. Please go like and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really does make a difference in helping other people find the show. And I'll see you next week here at the All Mom Does Podcast.
Thanks for listening. We just wanted to take a minute to let you know that just like you and your family, Purposely is also part of a family, the Krista Family of Ministries. Krista helps kids and teens learn and grow in their faith at King Schools and Miracle Ranch Camp. And Krista shares Jesus with people in the poorest, most remote places through World Concern. Krista Senior Living is a community of love and care, and Krista Media is a place of hope on the radio. God is changing lives through these five ministries, and Krista is on mission to share the good news of Jesus. To learn more, visit Krista.org.